Today we're going to talk about the Muslim conquest, but before we do, I'm first going to describe a brief description of life for the Jews between the completion of the Talmud until the Muslim conquest. There was tremendous religious persecution in mid-5th century in Persia. In 455, there was a ban on observing Shabbos. Shuls and schools were banned, and Jewish children were taken away from their parents to be educated by the Persian priesthood. For the first time, we hear of Jewish martyrs in Bavel, and several scholars were cast in prison and eventually executed. Many sought refuge as far away as Arabia in the south and India in the east. Towards the end of the 5th century, we have reports of an independent Jewish kingdom, because in 495, disorders broke out all over the Persian Empire, and King Kabad I was deposed and imprisoned. Marzutra, the leader of the Jewish people in Bavel, used this opportunity to form a small army of his own, and he founded a kingdom with Mechoza as his capital, and he proceeded to levy taxes and wage war. And he actually had this Jewish kingdom last for 7 years. However, Kabad regained the throne, defeated the Jewish kingdom, and crucified Marzutra on the bridge of Mechoza. Shortly thereafter, Jewish institutions were ordered to be closed, and Jewish leadership fled eastward and southward and established a yeshiva beyond the reach of the central Persian government. Eventually, life returned to normal, and in the 6th century, Babylonian Jewry reestablished its institutions, including the office of the exilarch and the custom of Yarchei Kala. During the last 100 years before the Arab conquest, from 528 to 639, there was a period of uncertainty. Some years less persecution, some years more persecution, depending on the power of the religious priesthood in the government. Therefore, the Jews welcomed the arrival of the Arab conquerors during the Arab conquest. Now, during this time, the spiritual leaders were called Savoraim. They were teachers of the era between the Amoraim and the Gaonim. According to Rav Shrira Gaon, when he discusses in his historical work the Savoraim, he believes that it started in Shnat Tuf Tuf Tesvav, in 815 of the Seleucid era, which is 5, it's when the Greek calendar began. So that was around 507 CE, and it lasted till about 700 CE. And therefore, the period extending from the conclusion of the Talmud until shortly before, or maybe even shortly after the Arab conquest, is known in the history of halakhic literature as the Savoride era. Some claim that certain anonymous statements in Talmud Bavli are to be attributed to the Savoraim. They apparently had a considerable share in the final formulation of many passages in the Talmud. Meanwhile, while this is taking place in Bavel, in Eretz Yisrael, after the abolition of the Patriarchate in 425 CE, life was difficult in Eretz Yisrael. During this period of time, Israel was under Byzantine rule. Now, Byzantium is the name given to the eastern division of the Roman Empire, with its capital in Constantinople. See, in 330, Constantine founded a new eastern imperial capital, a second Rome, which was built on the site of a Greek town called Byzantium, which Constantine renamed Constantinople, i.e. Constantine City. This is modern-day Istanbul. And ever since the end of the 3rd century, the Roman imperial office had been split from time to time between a western and eastern emperor. And by the end of the 4th century, the split had become permanent. Thereafter, the eastern part was ruled from Constantinople, while the western half was ruled from Milan first, and then Ravenna, more strategically situated than Rome. During these 2 centuries, the Jewish population in Eretz Yisrael dwindled, and the legal status of Jews deteriorated. From 438 to 527, it was a time of relative quiet for Jews. Economically, this was also a prosperous time for Jews in Eretz Yisrael. However, in 527, when Justinian ascended the imperial throne, anti-Jewish legislation was renewed. In the last days of Byzantine rule over the land of Eretz Yisrael, the Jews attempted to exploit the rivalry between the superpowers of the area, Persia, Rome, and Byzantium, in order to regain their political independence. For years, the Jews had hoped that Persia would free the Jews from the yoke of Byzantium. And at the beginning of the 7th century, they believed that the time had arrived. In the beginning of the 7th century, Persia had set out to conquer the eastern part of the Roman Empire. And in the year 614, they reached the borders of Eretz Yisrael. The Jews believed that this was their messianic era. And the Jews assisted the invaders materially in their conquest of the Galil. From there, the invading army continued towards Caesarea, which is the western coast of Eretz Yisrael, to Apollonia, to Lydda, or Lud, and finally to Yerushalayim in May of 614. The Persians handed Yerushalayim over to the Jewish settlers, who proceeded with the expulsion of the Christians and the removal of their churches. Now, there's a fascinating account of the sack of Yerushalayim in 614 by the monk Antiochus Stategos. This might be an original source of a blood libel, as you will soon see. And this is what he writes. The beginning of the struggle of the Persians with the Christians of Jerusalem was on the 15th of April in the fourth year of the Emperor Heraclius. And he skips, I'll skip a bit. Meanwhile, and he writes that the Persians spent 20 days in the struggle. On the 21st day, they broke down the city wall. The evil Persians, who had no pity in their hearts, raced to every place in the city and with one accord extirpated all the people. Anyone who ran away in terror, they caught hold of. And if any cried out from fear, they roared at them with gashing teeth. And by breaking their teeth on the ground, forced them to close their mouths. They slaughtered tender infants on the ground. And then with loud yelps called their parents. The parents bewailed the children with vociferations and sobbings, but were promptly dispatched along with them. Any that were caught armed were massacred with their own weapons. Those who ran swiftly were pierced with arrows. The unresisting and quiet they slew without mercy. And then the account continues with what the Jews did. It says the following. Thereupon the vile Jews, enemies of the truth and haters of Jesus, when they perceived that the Christians were given over to the hands of the enemy, rejoiced exceedingly because they detested the Christians, and they conceived an evil plan in keeping with their vileness about the people. For in the eyes of the Persians, their importance was great, because they were the betrayers of the Christians. And in this season, then the Jews approached the edge of the reservoir and called out to the children of God while they were shut up therein and said to them, if you would escape from death, become Jews and deny Jesus, then ye shall step up from your place and join us. We will ransom you with our money and ye shall be benefited by us. In other words, the Jews basically said to the Christians, if you convert to Judaism, we will spare you. And the account continues, but their plot and desire were not fulfilled. Their labors proved to be in vain because the children of the Holy Church chose death for Jesus' sake rather than to live in godlessness. And they reckoned it better for their flesh to be punished rather than their souls ruined, so that their portion would not be with the Jews. And when the unclean Jews saw their steadfast uprightness of the Christians and their immovable faith, and they were agitated with lively ire, like evil beasts, and thereupon imagined another plot. As of old, they bought the Lord from the Jews with silver, so they purchased Christians out of the reservoir. For they gave the Persians silver, and they bought a Christian and slew him like a sheep. The Christians, however, rejoiced because they were being slain for Jesus' sake and shed their blood for his blood, and took on themselves death in return for his death. When the people were carried into Persia, the Jews were left in Jerusalem. They began with their own hands to demolish and burn some of the holy churches that were left standing. And so this account doesn't seem like this would be true, because Judaism, for the most part, does not believe in forcible conversion. Now, there's one time in Jewish history when Yochanan Hyrcanus, John Hyrcanus, the son of Shimon, Simon, the last of the Hasmonean brothers, the first sons of Matisyahu. So the grandson of Matisyahu, Yochanan Hyrcanus, son of Shimon, so he forcibly converted the Idumeans, those living in Edom. But Jews don't believe in forcibly converting Christians. And here, what the monk and Antiochus Stategos describes is a sense how the Christians are dying, you know, in the name of their God. It's similar, you know, you can just flip the terms and flip the identities. And this is what happened, unfortunately, to many Jews in the throughout the Middle Ages, when the Christians wanted to kill the Jews, and they would only spare them if the Jews would convert to Judaism, to Christianity. But the Jews, of course, died al Kiddush Hashem and did not convert. This is probably not an accurate account. Again, there's no, it doesn't seem to be any evidence that the Jews actually tried to convert the Christians. That's not the modus operandi of the Jewish religion. In any case, the head of the Jewish settlers at the time was named Nechemiah ben Hushiel ben Ephraim ben Yosef. And Jewish rule in Yerushalayim lasted for 3 years. But in 617 of the Common Era, there was a reversal of Persian policy as the Persians made peace with the Christians. And for reasons that are unclear, the Persians fought the Jews, and Nechemiah was killed. Meanwhile, in 622, the Byzantine Empire, Emperor Heraclius, embarked on a campaign against Persia and eventually succeeded in forcing Persia to agree to withdraw from his conquered possessions. In 629, the emperor arrived in Eretz Yisrael preparing for his greatest hour, when he would enter into Yerushalayim and reinstate the Holy Cross. The Jews made a desperate attempt to come to terms with the new conqueror, and they gave him gifts, and in return he promised to pardon them, and even signed a treaty with them and conferred it with an oath. On March 21st, 629, Heraclius made his triumphant entry into Yerushalayim and returned to place the relics of the Holy Cross in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Now, Heraclius was not anti-Jewish and had intended to keep his promise of clemency, but he was forced to break it at the insistence of the clergy. The priests assumed responsibility for the emperor's perjury, in atonement of which they instituted a special fast. The emperor ordered that the Jews be expelled from Yerushalayim and its surroundings. A number of Jews were accused of having killed Christians and having destroyed churches, and many Jews were put to death, and some fled to Persian or Egyptian lands. However, this rule and persecution did not last long, because by this time, another group appeared on the scene, the Arabs, under the leadership of Mohammed. Now, let's speak a bit about Mohammed and the Jews. Let's talk about the Jews in Arabia, because there were Jews living in Arabia in the time of Mohammed. It is unclear when the Jewish population arrived in Arabia, but it is certain that by the middle of the 5th century, Jews were to be found as far as the southernmost tip of the Arabian Peninsula in the Kingdom of Yemen. By the 6th century, Jews were to be found in and near Mecca and Yathrib, or Medina, two important cities of Arabia. The population was not organized politically into one unit. Rather, it was divided into tribes. The Arabian Jews possessed little learning compared to the Jews of Babel and Eretz Yisrael, but they did know and revere the Bible, and they, together with the Christians, were called by the pagan Arabs as the people of the book. They were considered superior to the pagans around them with their belief in the unity of God, their higher personal morality, their dignified observance of the fast and the feast, their rest from work on the Sabbath, and the refusal to permit a fellow Jew, even from a different tribe, to remain in slavery. Thus, they prepared the mind of the pagan Arabs for the acceptance of a higher form of religion. Now, Muhammad's childhood and youth were spent in the city of Mecca. He was born in 571 of the Common Era. But Muhammad was poor and consequently did not receive much education. But he was gifted with intelligence, and he rose from being a mere camel driver to be the leader of a caravan and the manager of his employer's business. He became an exporter. And during his trips and at home, he came in contact with Jews and Christians, and he learned about their religion. He felt that the Jewish and Christian religions were superior to Arab paganism, and he became convinced that it was desirable and possible to change the religion of his people. So Muhammad began to carry out his plan. He liked the idea of the unity of God in Judaism better than the Christian idea of the Trinity. He then declared himself a prophet, the greatest that ever lived, greater than Moshe and Jesus. But he did believe that Moses and Moshe Rabbeinu and Jesus were also prophets. He asserted that he received prophecies, and these prophecies were put together into a book, which Muhammad meant to rival the Bible of the Jews or the Christians. It was called the Quran, which means the recital, and it is the holy scripture of Islam. In his prophecies, he prohibited sacrifices, he instituted prayer, he outlined a life of morality and ethics modeled after the Jews and Christians. And as in these two religions, he promised the faithful the rewards of joy after death. His religion assumed the name Islam. Some say it's related to the name Shalom, and its adherents were called Muslims. Now, when Muhammad began to preach his new ideas, he met with a great deal of opposition. His fellow tribesmen resented the things he said about the old religion of the Arabs. He was actually forced to flee from his home in Mecca in 622, and this year became known as Year 1 in the Muslim calendar, because it was Muhammad's arrival at the neighboring town of Yathrib, renamed Medina, which began the series of successes that established Islam. Muhammad had hoped that the Jews would appreciate him and hail him as their leader, because his new religion carried with it so many Jewish elements. But the Jews in and around Medina laughed at him. They viewed him as a regular guy, a pagan, someone who was ignorant of the Bible, and he still preached in a number of pagan customs. They were also horrified at his claims of being superior to Moshe Rabbeinu. Soon, Muhammad realized that basically the Jews would not accept him, so he became angry, and he began to preach revelations of accusations against the Jews, and he decided to destroy them. If you look through the Quran, there are a number of passages that reflect Muhammad's very negative view of the Jews. So, for example, he writes in Surah 5:51, "O you who believe, take not the Jews and the Christians as friends. They are friends to one another. Whoever of you befriends them is one of them. Allah does not guide the people who do evil." And in another passage, he writes, "Have you not seen those who have received a portion of the scripture? They purchase error, and they want you to go astray from the path. But Allah knows best who your enemies are, and it's sufficient to have Allah as a helper. Some of the Jews pervert words for their meetings and say, 'We hear and we disobey,' and heed us, twisting with their tongues and slandering religion." So he accuses them of not heeding, not obeying. Another passage states, "Due to the wrongdoing on the part of the Jews, we forbade them good things that used to be lawful for them, and for deterring many from God's path, and for taking usury, although they were forbidden it, and for their consuming people's wealth dishonestly." Jews are dishonest in business, according to the Quran. Another passage they claim, the passage states that the Jews said Ezra is the son of God, and the Christians said the Messiah is the son of God. These are their statements out of their mouths. They emulate the statements of those who blasphemed before. May God assail them, how deceived they are. They have taken their rabbis and their priests as lords instead of God, as well as the Messiah, the son of Mary. In other words, this passage equates Judaism with Christianity, and they assert that the Jews believe that Ezra is somehow divine. He's called the son of God, that he is divine, just as the Christians claim that Jesus is the son of God. Obviously, we do not believe that. Another passage states, "You will find that the people most hostile towards the believers are the Jews and the polytheists." So the Jews are much worse, and the polytheists are much worse than actually the Christians. And they actually like the Jews better. They say that the Christians and the monks, the priests and the monks, are not arrogant. So Muhammad's not too happy with the Jews. And the truth is that had the Jewish tribes joined forces to oppose Muhammad, they probably would have defeated him. But they were divided. So Muhammad attacked and destroyed the Jewish tribes one by one, and he confiscated all of the wealth of the Jews. And this accomplished two things. He could now claim that God was on his side, because let's say one religion, people of one religion face off against people of another religion. So whichever side wins can say, well, it's my God is obviously stronger than your God. So he can claim that God is on his, or that God is on his side of his religion. And he could use, and secondly, he can use the Jewish wealth to support his movement and lure more people to his camp. Therefore, a large number of Arabs joined his movement. Muhammad used the same strategy in attacking the non-Jewish tribes in Arabia one by one. And he conquered Mecca in 629, 7 years after he was expelled from that town. Within one century after Muhammad fled from Mecca, virtually the entire Near East came under Muslim rule. They conquered as far west as North Africa and Spain, and as far east as India and Pakistan. They conquered all of Eretz Yisrael, Babel, and Egypt. They were stopped in France by Charles Martel, Prince of the Franks, in 732. This meant that in short order, 90% of the Jewish population was now living as part of the Muslim Empire. And now the Muslims had to decide, how were they going to treat this group that refused to believe what they believed in? And with this, we'll continue, God willing, in our next session.